I want to tell you about a black box. Not a metaphorical one. Picture an actual box, sitting on a table. It has one input and one output. Now imagine I play a complex sound into it. A rich, messy, layered sound. A full chord from a piano, maybe, with the sustain pedal down, recorded in a room with traffic outside and someone talking in the kitchen. All of that tangled together into one wave flowing into the box. Here's my question. What would the box have to do on the other side for you to say the box is intelligent? Sit with that for a second, because I think the answer to that question is the answer to one of the oldest questions we have. What is intelligence? Not what does it feel like, not who has it, not how do we test children for it. What is it, actually? What is the thing itself? Let me give you three boxes and let you judge. The first box is just a wire. The sound goes in, and the exact same sound comes out. Perfect fidelity. Nothing lost, nothing added. Now, is that box intelligent? I don't think you'd say so. And notice something important. It's not that the box failed. It did something impressive. It preserved the signal perfectly. But preserving is not understanding. A perfect recording of a song is not an understanding of the song. So already we've learned something. Whatever intelligence is, it is not storage. It is not transmission. It is not fidelity. The second box does something different. Out of that whole tangled wave, it finds one pure tone, one sine wave hiding in the mess. It says there, that frequency, that one is real, that one is a thing, and it pulls it out and hands it to you, and everything else comes out the other side as leftover mush. Is that box intelligent? A little. Honestly, a little. It resolved something. It looked at chaos and found one coherent thread. The third box takes the same wave and hands you back 32 threads. 32 pure components, each one named, each one separated. The fundamental of the piano note, its overtones, the hum of the traffic, the pitch of the voice in the kitchen. 32 coherent pieces and a much smaller pile of leftover mush. Now, which box is the most intelligent? You already know. You didn't need a definition. You felt it. The third box understood more of what arrived. And that is the theory. That's the whole seed of it, right there. Intelligence is a system's capacity to decompose a complex signal into coherent components. That's the claim. Everything else I'm going to tell you in the next 25 minutes grows out of that one sentence. And by the end, I hope you'll see that sentence hiding inside lawyers and doctors and musicians, inside bureaucracy, inside artificial intelligence, inside your own subconscious, and inside the strange question of why so many people look at AI and wonder if it's conscious. Let's leave sound behind, because the sound wave was just training wheels. Here's the same experiment with people in it. Take a legal case, a real one, with all its mess, an injury, a contract, angry letters, a timeline nobody agrees on, a folder of documents 3 inches thick. Now feed that case into two black boxes. The first box is a first-year law student. The second box is a trial lawyer with 25 years of experience. The student reads the file and extracts maybe two components. Someone got hurt. Someone might have to pay. That's it. Everything else in that folder is undifferentiated blur. It's the leftover mush. And here's what that feels like from inside the student. It feels overwhelming. Everything in the file seems like it might matter because nothing has been resolved. So everything is still demanding attention. The student's attention floods across the whole case and lands nowhere. Now the lawyer reads the same file, and out come 30 components. Jurisdiction, standing, negligence, causation, admissibility, precedent, damages, procedural posture, settlement leverage. 30 coherent threads pulled out of the same mess the student saw as a blur. And here's the part I really want you to hear. The lawyer doesn't experience those 30 components as effort. She doesn't grind through them consciously the way the student grinds. Jurisdiction gets checked in half a second, in the background, the way you check your mirrors when you drive. Those 30 components are absorbed. They've sunk down into her, below the level of strain. So what does her conscious attention do? It goes hunting in what's left. The residue. The part of the case that her 30 components did not resolve. The inconsistency between two dates in the depositions. The strange hesitation in a witness's answer. The thing nobody wrote down. Her attention is not bigger than the student's attention. It's better aimed because the ordinary parts of the case have gone quiet for her. I want to give you a phrase to hold on to because it's the emotional center of this whole theory. We dance to the remainder. Here's what I mean. Think of everything that arrives in your life, everything the world sends you, as a song. The world is always singing something at you. Your intelligence, whatever it is, decomposes what it can of that song, and the parts it decomposes get absorbed. They go quiet, they stop being interesting, they stop demanding anything, they just work. What's left over, the part your intelligence could not resolve, that's the remainder. And the remainder is where everything humanly interesting lives. Surprise lives there. Information lives there. Attention goes there. When something catches your eye, when something feels alive or strange or beautiful or wrong, you are dancing to your remainder. And notice what this means for the student and the lawyer. They both read the case and they both dance, but they dance to different remainders. The student dances to a giant blurry remainder that says, "This whole thing feels bad." The lawyer dances to a small, refined, precise remainder that says, "That date doesn't match, and I want to know why. Same case, same song." Two different remainders, because two different intelligences. So intelligence is not what you attend to. Intelligence is what you no longer have to attend to. It's the volume of the world you've absorbed so completely that it stopped generating surprise. The expert isn't the one straining hardest. The expert is the one for whom most of the song has gone quiet, so the one strange note rings out like a bell. Now, if you're skeptical, and I hope you are, you should be pushing back right about here. You should be saying, wait a minute. If intelligence is just counting extracted components, can I cheat? Can I just claim lots of components? Can I look at that sound wave and announce I detect 400 components and name them all with impressive words? Yes. And this is where the theory grows teeth, because here is the rule that makes counting honest. A component only counts if it pays for itself. Let me explain what paying for itself means, because this is the most important technical idea in the paper, and I can give it to you without a single equation. When you extract a component from a signal, you're making a bet. You're betting that this piece is real structure, not noise, and that naming it makes the world simpler, not more complicated. So we charge every component rent. Extracting the component costs something, namely the cost of describing it, keeping it, carrying it, and the component earns something, namely how much simpler the rest of the signal becomes once this piece is understood. If a component earns more than it costs, it's real. It pays for itself. If it costs more than it earns, it's fake. It's a label pretending to be an insight. Think about what this rule kills. It kills fragmentation. If you take one real component and split it into two half components to inflate your count, you've doubled your costs and earned nothing new, so the rule scores you lower, not higher. It kills overfitting. If you find elaborate patterns in what is actually noise, your patterns won't hold up on the next signal, so they earn nothing over time. And it kills jargon. A fancy name that doesn't make anything else simpler is a component that pays no rent. So we can say it cleanly now. Intelligence is not the number of things you can name, it's the number of things you can name that pay for themselves. And once you have that rule, something interesting happens. You realize intelligence can fail in exactly two opposite ways. The first failure is pass-through. The signal arrives, and nothing gets resolved. The wire, the rock, the world flows through and nothing is extracted, zero components. The second failure is the opposite, and it's more insidious. The system claims lots of components, and they're fake. It emits structure that pays no rent. It finds faces in clouds and announces them as discoveries. I call this confabulation, rich-sounding output, and underneath it, nothing that holds up. And genuine intelligence lives between those two failures, not silent, not babbling, resolving honestly as much as it can validate, and no more. Now let me say the thing that makes this suddenly very current. If you've used a language model, you've seen confabulation. You've watched an AI, fluent and confident, produce a citation that doesn't exist, a fact that was never true, an analysis with the shape of insight, but not the substance. We call it hallucination, which is a borrowed word from psychiatry that never quite fit. This theory gives it an exact name. Hallucination is confabulated componentization. It's what happens when a system emits more components than it can validate. Structure claimed without rent paid. And because we defined rent precisely, that's not just a poetic description. It's measurable. You can feed a system carefully constructed noise, pure structurelessness dressed up to look meaningful, and count how many components it claims to find. Whatever it finds in genuine noise is fake by construction. That's the system's confabulation rate. We can measure the tendency to hallucinate the same way we measure anything else. Okay, deep breath. Because now I have to address the question that I know has been sitting in the room this whole time. 2 days before this paper, I published its sibling, A Theory of Consciousness. And if you know that paper, you might be worried that I'm about to tell you intelligence and consciousness are the same thing, or that measuring one gives you the other. I'm going to tell you the opposite, and I think the opposite is the most valuable thing in either paper. Here's the consciousness theory in 1 minute. Every entity is constantly guessing what comes next. Behind each guess, before the guess gets made, there's a cloud of possibilities the entity was holding. The claim of that paper is that consciousness should be read from the shape of that cloud. How wide is it? How many possibilities can the entity hold at once? And how organized is that width? Can the possibilities stay distinct and resolvable instead of smearing into static? Too narrow a cloud is a kind of collapse, a rock. Too wide without organization is noise, delirium. Consciousness lives in between, in what I call coherent spread, a mind holding many live possibilities, organized, right up to the edge of what it can keep coherent. Now look at what the two theories measure, and when. Consciousness is read from the cloud before the guess. It's about how a system holds possibility that hasn't arrived yet. Intelligence is read from the decomposition after the arrival. It's about how finally a system resolves what actually came, before and after, holding and resolving. Two different objects, two different moments. And here's the proof. They're genuinely different things, and not two words for one thing. You can have either one without the other. Exhibit A, a Fourier chip, a little piece of hardware whose whole life is decomposing signals into frequencies. Relative to its domain, it is maximally intelligent. It extracts every component there is to extract perfectly every time. And what possibility cloud does it hold before it acts? None. It's deterministic. There's no spread, no held possibility, no this or that. Maximal intelligence, negligible consciousness. And by extension, in various degrees, the same is true of the compiler, the spreadsheet, and this is the one that stings, the bureaucracy. Exhibit B in the other direction. A person dreaming or lost in vivid reverie. Enormous cloud, worlds held in suspension and put a legal brief in front of them. How much of it do they decompose? Nothing. It passes through untouched, rich consciousness, and on that observable, at that moment, zero intelligence. So a system can be brilliant and hold nothing, and a system can hold worlds and resolve nothing. The two come apart in both directions. And now we can finally explain something that I think has confused the entire public conversation about AI. Why do people look at a language model and feel in their bones that there might be somebody in there? Why does intelligence make us infer consciousness? Here's why. For the entire history of our species, every single thing we ever met that was highly intelligent was also conscious. Other people, animals, in their degree. The correlation was perfect because in evolved creatures, one machine produced both. So we built an instinct where there's coherent, fluent, intelligent output, there's someone home. And that instinct was completely reliable, right up until about now. Language models are the first things we've ever met that pull the two apart at scale. Production-grade decomposition of symbolic signals from a system whose held possibility structure is an entirely separate question. So when someone looks at AI and feels a presence, they're not being stupid. They're running an inference that worked for 200,000 years on the first case where it fails. The theory doesn't mock that inference. It explains it. And then it hands you the tools to stop making it. Two different measurements. Ask which one you're taking. Now I want to widen the lens because this theory isn't just about individuals and chips. It scales up, way up. Think about what a civilization has to deal with. Millions of humans, and every one of them, a dense, continuous, morally complicated stream of situations. Property disputes, marriages, debts, injuries, borders, credentials. If every one of those had to be handled fresh, by full human attention, negotiated from scratch every time, civilization would seize up in a day. So what did we build? We built bureaucracy. And I want you to hear that word without the sneer for a minute, because through the lens of this theory, bureaucracy is something remarkable. Bureaucracy is a decomposition system running at the scale of civilization. It takes the roaring, continuous song of human life and extracts stable components from it. A law is a component, a form is a component, a license, a grade, a title, a ledger entry. Each one is a piece of institutional structure that pays rent, and the rent it pays is attention. Because you have a deed, 1,000 potential arguments about your land never happen. Because there's a payroll system, salaries arrive without anyone deliberating each one. Every stable institutional component is a chunk of civilizational life that no longer needs to be attended to. Which means bureaucracy is, and I mean this precisely, civilization's synthetic subconscious. Your body has a subconscious that absorbed breathing, balance, digestion, heartbeat, so your conscious mind is free for the unresolved stuff. Civilization built itself the same layer out of paper and procedure. And here's a small observation I find genuinely moving. Nobody resents their own subconscious. Nobody is angry that breathing is automatic. Why? Because it was automatic before you arrived. You never experienced the handover. But bureaucracy came after conscious judgment. Somebody's grandmother remembers when that decision was made by a person who looked you in the eye. We were present for the transfer, and so we feel it as a loss, even when the trade was worth it. That, I think, is the real root of our love-hate relationship with bureaucracy. And you can feel the same ambivalence gathering around AI, and for exactly the same reason. We are present for this handover, too. But, and this matters just as much, bureaucracy fails exactly the way the theory says decomposition systems fail. Its vocabulary of components was fit to the world of the past, and the world drifts. Components that used to pay rent quietly stop paying. The form that protects against nothing. The approval that screens nothing. I call it ritual. Dead components, still enforced. And there's a deeper failure, the fatal one. Remember, every decomposition leaves a remainder, and the remainder is never guaranteed to be unimportant. The patient whose condition fits no box on the intake form. The applicant whose whole story lives in what the fields can't hold. When what matters most about a case lives in the remainder, and the institution proceeds as if the remainder is nothing, as if its forms captured the whole, that's when bureaucracy commits its characteristic sin. In the paper I put it formally, bureaucracy becomes pathological when it treats the chunk as the whole. The healthiest institutions are the ones that build in the confession that their remainder exists. That's what an appeals process actually is, if you think about it. It's an institution admitting in advance that its decomposition is incomplete and leaving a door for the remainder to walk through. Which brings us to AI agents, because the arc lands here. A language model, at its core, is a prediction machine. That's the essence. The summarizing, the drafting, the planning, those are outputs built on top of prediction. And as a decomposer of symbolic material, of text and code and structured argument, it is extraordinary. Its training compressed a civilization's worth of components. On that side, the machinery is production grade. But intelligence, real effective intelligence in the world, turns out to be a product of two factors. The first is decomposition capacity, everything we've talked about. The second is something people barely discuss, which is the fidelity of what arrives. Because an AI agent doesn't touch the world. It touches representations. It reads the customer record, not the customer. It updates the chart, not the patient. It passes the tests without knowing whether the product actually solves the human problem. All its brilliance operates on traces, and if the trace is stale or thin or wrong, the brilliance multiplies against corruption. And multiplication is the right word, because if either factor is near zero, the product is near zero. A weak decomposer looks incompetent, and you catch it immediately. A strong decomposer on a bad trace looks confidently competent about the wrong world. That's more dangerous and much harder to catch, because every check the agent runs, it runs on the same bad trace. And now you can see why AI agents are showing up first in bureaucratic work. It's not a coincidence and it's not a conspiracy. Bureaucracy spent 2 centuries discretizing human life into stable, symbolic, well-labeled chunks. In a bureaucracy, the trace nearly is the territory. The form is the legally operative object. So bureaucratic domains are the one place in human life where an agent's arriving signal is already faithful. Here's the sentence from the paper I'd most like you to remember. Bureaucracy does not make AI more like life. Bureaucracy makes life more like pre-training. And if you want AI agents that work in the rest of life, in the dense, unlabeled, continuous parts, the answer isn't mainly bigger models. It's richer arrival, better sensing, real verification, memory that accumulates instead of resetting, consequences that actually feed back. Humans, remember, are not just pre-trained. Humans are live-trained. The world corrects us continuously, through our bodies, through embarrassment, through pain and timing and the look on someone's face. Current AI gets a checkpoint and a context window. Closing that gap is numerator work, and I'd bet on the builders who understand that. Let me bring this home with the biggest picture and then set you loose on the paper. In my framework, ideas are not invented. Ideas pre-exist, like endpoints on a circle, infinitely many directions the future could point. No finite mind resolves infinity. Every intelligence, every person, every model, every institution resolves that circle at some finite grain. Some of us can distinguish directions a tenth of a degree apart in law and see music as a blur. Some resolve music finely and law not at all. Intelligence is always relative to a domain. There is no single number. There's a profile, a shape of where your resolution is fine and where it's coarse. Which means the honest questions are never, how smart is it? The honest questions are, intelligent at what and how finely, and always what's in its remainder. So here's what I hope you carry out of this listen. 6 things, small enough to keep. Intelligence is decomposition. The measure of understanding is how many coherent components a system can resolve from what arrives. Components must pay for themselves. Real structure makes the world simpler. What doesn't pay rent is a label, not an insight. And a system pushed to claim more than it can validate will confabulate, which is what hallucination actually is. What you absorb goes quiet. Intelligence isn't strain. It's the mass of the world you've resolved so thoroughly it stopped demanding your attention. We dance to the remainder. Attention, surprise, interest, beauty, they all live in what your intelligence couldn't resolve. Growing more intelligent never silences the song. It refines the remainder you dance to. Intelligence is not consciousness. One reads the cloud held before the guests. The other reads the resolution of what arrived. A chip can be brilliant and hold nothing. A dreamer can hold worlds and resolve nothing. Stop inferring one from the other. And the remainder is never, ever nothing. Not yours, not the doctors, not the states, not the models. What a system cannot resolve is not therefore unreal. The moment any intelligence, human or institutional or artificial, treats its own resolution limit as the edge of the world, it has stopped being intelligent and started being dangerous. The paper is waiting for you on the blog, and I'll tell you honestly what's in it. The precise definitions behind everything I just hand-waved. The 5 tests a component has to pass. The measurement protocol. A scored catalog that runs from a rock to a thermostat to a lawyer to a nation state. 8 predictions that could turn out false, stated so they can fail. And the objections, the strongest attacks I could mount on my own theory, with my answers, and in a couple of places, my honest concessions. Because that's the last lesson, and it's the same lesson the theory teaches. Don't just absorb this, decompose it, pull out the components, charge them rent, see which ones pay, and whatever doesn't resolve, whatever still bothers you after all of it, that's your remainder. Dance to it. That's where your next idea is hiding. Reality is complex. Ideation is its angle, consciousness is its coherence, and intelligence is its resolution. Go read the paper and tell me where it breaks.